Welcome to the 10K Collective, my friends. Now, look, if you're listening for hacks and short-term tactics, I'm afraid you are in the wrong place. Let me tell you about the 10K Collective Mastermind. First of all, its members meet in person. They know each other well. They all make over $500,000 a year. Several make several million a year. Many have doubled their revenue over the last 18 months. If you're that kind of person, then this podcast is made for you. Today's episode is sponsored by the new e-commerce podcast, The E-Commerce Leader. The podcast is hosted by yours truly and Jason Miles, multi-million dollar Shopify owner and Udemy's highest rated e-commerce instructor. If you're the owner of a thriving online business and you want to become the best e-commerce leader you can be, it's got your name on it. For free guides and mini courses on many topics, go to www.theecommerceleader.com. Ladles and jelly spoons, boys and girls, welcome back to the 10K Collective Podcast, the place for six, seven, and eight figure Amazon sellers. And not just Amazon sellers, actually. Today's episode, I think, is going to apply to anyone running a business, but particularly anyone who's working online and wants to systematize and scale the business. And today we're talking to Will Christensen, who's the CEO and founder of Data Automation. And they're the experts at automation and integration. Very cool buzzwords. Welcome to the show, Will.
Thanks. We've worked hard to figure out who we are.
There's no joke. That's seriously one of the most important things. I mean, I get people come to me with the sort of beginner, newbie, whatever you want to call it, people wanting to sell on Amazon who have no idea what they are as a business, who they serve, why they exist. Mm-hmm. And it's so hard to help people who don't know who they are. It's just crazy. So anyway, you're the experts at automation integration. So we're going to dive in today into the e-myth and the e-commerce seller. I love this topic. Big fan of the e-myth. Before we do that, just give us a sort of Cliff Notes version of yourself and how you came to be doing what you're doing today.
Absolutely. So I started this, it's funny, my automation journey began, well, I would say it honestly began when I was a little kid. We were recently doing some time capsules with my family. We opened up the time capsules because it's 2020. And these time capsules were the kind of thing that we put in a time capsule 20 years ago. And so you could see kind of all sorts of like what was out there. And one of the things in the time capsule said, what new inventions or what new technology do you think is going to exist 20 years from now? And I sat down and I thought, you know, I think there are going to be self-driving garbage cans. And this actually goes back to my childhood because I was diagramming, I was like six, and I was diagramming this invention that would reach behind the house and suck the garbage out of the garbage can so that I didn't have to take it to the road anymore. And so this is the invention I believe is going to be here in 20 years. And so when you ask, like, how did you get where you are? I've always had a passion for automating things, for making things more efficient. And that led me to learning a lot about Excel and Google Sheets initially. I figured that there must be more behind these formulas than just formulas. And so I had to extend the ability of Excel to handle things that it couldn't handle without code, taught myself how to code, and eventually became a one-stop shop for automation. And that quickly led into integration, into APIs and connecting different systems, and went to a tech incubator and said, hey, I think I want to start a consultancy that just automates and integrates stuff for people. And at the time, I actually didn't know, like I said, I didn't realize that integration was going to be a big part of it, but it's become an integral part. That was no pun intended, but an integral part of our business where we're helping people basically take on whatever data transfer problems they're having and automation problems they're having to eliminate that waste.
Wow. I really love that. It's funny what occupies you when you're six, isn't it? And then when you're, in my case, 46, probably the same stuff. It's like mundane, especially in lockdown. I spent my life washing up. We don't have space for a dishwasher, but if we did and we didn't have a dishwasher invented yet, the first thing I'd be thinking right now is like, how can I automate my dishwashing so that I can get on with podcasting and making money and doing the interesting business stuff? Mm-hmm. So it's funny. I love the fact that you wanted this giant arm to reach over the house and take away the garbage, but you weren't far off with the self-driving garbage cans. I mean, I actually actually, that's probably simpler for Google to create the self-driving cars, right?
Well, I mean, you think about like I envision this like Roomba device where they make these wheels that retrofit your garbage can. So in the States, a lot of the garbage cans are like, they got the wheels in the back or whatever. And so you retrofit, you replace those wheels and attach this like sleeve on the bottom, and then all it's got to do, you just have to program the route, and it puts itself on the street, dumps it in the garbage can, and it puts itself back behind the house. I figured that's a little easier than the giant arm that reaches behind everybody's houses.
Somewhat less alarming and more efficient, I think. Yeah, I love it. I mean, there's interesting that the talking of automation, and we ought to get onto some practical subjects, but I do think sometimes a bigger picture is useful. I think that it used to be, when I was reading science fiction, Isaac Asimov and whoever, when I was a kid, it was all about robots, physical things replacing human activities. And of course, what's happened is that effectively, I suppose we could see artificial intelligence algorithms like Google, Facebook, and Amazon, to name but the big three that spring to my mind, that are hugely powerful. They're basically robots, but without arms. But they're doing a lot of that stuff. And fascinatingly, Amazon warehouses, of course, they have their robots famously, but I understand they're actually less automated than other warehouses. But the way that the robot comes in there is planning physical humans' routes. So they kind of being the robot brain sending out the human underlings. So it's fascinating, isn't it, that the era we live in. I guess we kind of get used to it, but there is a certain way of thinking that I think precedes practically implementing this stuff. So to bring it home, I guess, let's use the E-Myth Revisited framework to try and give something more concrete to this for struggling entrepreneurs. The E-Myth Revisited, famously subtitled Why Small Business Doesn't Work and What to Do About It, which I love that title because I think a lot of the time small businesses don't work. What's your sort of basic take on implementing that in business? And then we'll talk about how to integrate automation with that.
Absolutely. So I read the E-Myth for the first time several years ago and have since read it again two or three times. And I just love the way that it picks apart the three different individual distinct roles that have to exist in a business from the standpoint of the manager, the technician, and the entrepreneur. And if you haven't read the E-Myth yet as a visitor, I'll give you a brief rundown. But essentially, the manager is the guy who manages the current, the now, and the past. He's the guy who kind of organizes everything. The technician is the guy who's actually doing the work. He's the expert. And then you have the entrepreneur who's standing out in front, seeing the vision of where it goes. And in the book, he talks about an entrepreneurial seizure where you have this moment where you realize, oh, crap, what am I doing? Why am I here working for that dude and he's making all the money when I could, I know how to source products from China. I know how to source products from wherever else it is. I know how to put them up online. Why am I making that guy all this money? Or maybe you were doing something else and you decided, I bet you this Amazon seller thing wouldn't be that crazy. And now you're in the thick of it. And you may be at a point where you've completely replaced your income and you've gotten in there, or maybe you're just doing this part-time. It doesn't matter. The entrepreneur, the technician, and the manager are a piece of that business. And so what I've found is that automation ties into those three different roles in very different ways. And so I'm excited to talk a little bit more about that today and give some perspective about, you know, if you're in the middle of a business and you're looking to figure out, how do I scale this? Where do I grow? How do I do this? It comes right back to that those three roles.
And I think there's great mental clarity. It's like a lot of books. I think there's a lot of lessons to be taken from the E-Myth Revisited. But my two basically are those roles plus the power of a franchise type system where you really create processes. And for him, back in the day, 80s, 90s, I guess Michael Gerber was, he's still around, by the way, still alive. But I guess his focus was very much on sort of physical handbooks and notebooks and physical type businesses like McDonald's, famously the most, you know, famous example of, or even creator of, I suppose, the popularizer of the franchise model. But even if you just take one concept from a book and really apply it, I think that can just transform everything. So tell me a bit more about these three different hats then: technician, manager, entrepreneur. How do we start, you know, using automation regarding those?
So it all comes back, and I actually recently started a podcast myself called Automate, Delegate, Eliminate. And I started to begin to understand that Automate, Delegate, Eliminate really is the beginning step to understanding what you need to do and where you need to go, but one thing that you have to understand when you're automating, delegating, and eliminating is that each one of those hats, the entrepreneur, the manager, and the technician, have to exist inside a business. And initially, it's either you or you and a partner. But either whether it's you or you and a partner, you have to define roles. And so I was on the phone earlier with a seller who is, she's a seven-figure seller, and she sells dog ice cream and dog cakes. Her business is called Puppy Cakes. And she was talking about how building a business is all about defining a hat and then handing it off. Defining a hat and then handing it off. And so as business owners, we become the shapeshifters who create those different roles and responsibilities. And so automation is literally that pivot point. So automate, delegate, eliminate. If you haven't defined the process, you can't automate it. And so we talk about the entrepreneur, the manager, and the technician. The technician's doing the work. And a lot of times, if they can't write down the processes around all of the little things, they can't extract those things from their brain, they become the single point of failure for the business. And they burn out, and the business just evaporates. And so you have to take the technician and become the manager and step back behind yourself and watch and say, okay, what am I doing right now? Oh, I'm slapping this label on this package. And in this situation, I have to use this label. And in this situation, I've used this label. But why? And then document the why so that you can then have another individual come in and wear the shipping hat, right? So you have to understand those roles and literally write them down. If I could say one thing to the entrepreneurs that are listening, it's write it down. If you haven't written down that standard operating procedure, it's not a standard operating procedure yet. And in terms of being the entrepreneur, the visionary, the one who sees into the future, you have to kind of see what does it mean to see into the future. That same individual that I'm working with, I'm currently taking the process of deciding what products to buy and forecasting, and we're putting that into a spreadsheet. We're taking it out of her head and putting it into a spreadsheet so that she can fully understand where she's going. And there's a lot of forecasting tools, and she's looked into a bunch of them, but they don't really encompass what she's doing because she's a build it from the ground up kind of person. So it's important as you're looking at this to kind of see what does that role look like and what systems need to be in place so that someone besides me can do this job.
Absolutely. So the main question I've got is that this obviously makes total sense in theory, but what I like about the, maybe it just speaks to my life, but what I like about the E-Myth Revisited is that tagline, why most small businesses don't work and what to do about it. So if this is true, and I absolutely endorse what you're saying to be true from my experience, equally, I'm very capable of thrashing around without processes. Why do people not implement this good stuff then? And what's the solution to getting to actually doing it?
Well, it's honestly not the fun part. I mean, there are people out there who like this part of kind of writing down the processes and getting it systemized and seeing where that is. For me, the reason I wasn't doing that, even inside data automation, the reason I wasn't systemizing a lot of those things is because I didn't have team members in place that balanced me in a way that they could kind of take over and do some of that. So I figured out that like me sitting down and documenting how I was doing something was something that was very, very difficult. It was almost physically painful for me to do that. And so I discovered in that situation, it was better for me to delegate that responsibility. And so I have a personal organizer. So from the physical space standpoint, I have a personal organizer that comes and I could show you, I have probably 16 boxes over here just off camera. Each one has a very neat sticky note. And on the boxes, I have power strips and batteries and power and lights and audio and USB and audio visual computer parts. So these are all the things that were scattered throughout my office. Like just things that I could never find because they were never in a compartmentalized place. When I hired this individual to come in and help me, she gave me what I call a body double and allowed me to have the space necessary to organize. So I think to answer your question, Michael, one of the reasons that people don't get these processes in place, they don't organize themselves in this way, is because they're not the right person to create that organization. And so they need to find a partner or find an employee or find someone who can balance out some of what's there.
That's brilliant. I love that personal organizer. By the way, my wife and I had a bit of a barney about something ridiculous last night. What was it? We were trying to find some plastic containers to put some food in. I just couldn't find them. And it's funny how small things become the big things in relationships, and thus actually even in anything, just these small irritations can get in the way. For example, if you want to do a podcast and you can't find a microphone lead or something, not that that happened today, but that's the kind of thing that can put a hole in your day. I think just getting organized in very simple stuff is great, but more than anything, I love the fact that you're missing a weakness or that it's not for you, and that's really important. The other thing I've personally found is that I don't want to document processes. I don't see a need to. And I guess there isn't an immediate need when I'm just doing something myself. And when I'm, for example, with podcast editing, that I hired somebody in the past who's American, and they're very good, but quite expensive per hour. And I got my VA doing it at, you know, a very small amount in the Philippines. And he hadn't got previous podcast editing experience. If he had, he would have been more expensive because it's a valuable skill. And so I was training him, and I had to come up with a bunch of SOPs. I had to really think, how do I do this? Because I'd gone through, and by instinct, so my ear had said, no, that's not right. I should get rid of this. And then that's okay. And I had to really make conscious decisions. And I've now done the same for another podcast I'm working on. And it's just an example. It doesn't matter what it is. I think the same thing applies to physical products. But it's very hard to do in a vacuum. And once you have to do it, I found that. So would you advocate that you just hire somebody before you're ready to hire, and then that forces you to make the process? Or is that a recipe for disaster?
I mean, I think that you could fall on either side of that. I think that there is an exact right answer to that question. I would say that hiring someone does force you to do that. I'm in an entrepreneur group called 10X Factory, and they said one of the hacks that they've seen to get you to work harder is to hire someone to sit behind your chair. So just hire someone to literally just sit there. And eventually you're going to delegate stuff to them, because you're going to see like, oh, she or he could totally do that. And it would take me as long to explain it, or 2 seconds to explain it, an hour to do it. Right. And so you kind of have to see where that is. So I would say that hiring is sometimes the right move if you've got the budget to force you to look at those different things and see where it is. But think about that. Go back to those three individuals, the manager, the technician, and the entrepreneur. If you can learn to wear those three hats in the business and at least create those roles, okay, today I will be the technician and I will do the work of shipping and listing and whatever else it is. And tomorrow I will be the entrepreneur and I will forward think into the business. Even if you just broke it apart at the beginning and said, Monday, Tuesday, I'm the technician. Wednesday, Thursday, I'm the manager. And Fridays are my entrepreneur days. If you began there, you're going to start to understand what it means to hate the other guys in the business and recognize how to build relationships between them. But if you just flip back and forth like most entrepreneurs and go manager, technician, entrepreneur, manager, technician, entrepreneur, and you just focus on whatever's in front of you, you'll never get to the point where the thing becomes more than a job that owns you. I mean, it really, when you think about it, the businesses that aren't systemized and are completely dependent on you, that's not a business, that's a job. You own a job. And I frankly hate owning a job more than I hate having a job. You can't leave that job. Like, the job owns you. It's 10 o'clock at night and you should be hanging out with your wife watching a movie, and you are not hanging out with your wife watching a movie. You are shipping freaking packages because the job owns you instead of you owning the job.
I think you've been spying into my life in the last 24 hours. I mean, I think you've just nailed, unfortunately, here I am podcasting about all this stuff and I should know better, but this has been my life. I think you're right that it's so easy to fall into that trap. So tell me a bit more about this idea then, Monday and Tuesday as technician, Wednesday, Thursday as manager, and Friday entrepreneur. I mean, how does that work in practice? Give me an example of a sort of week. And is that something you've actually done, by the way? Is this like a sort of practice that you've gone through, or how does that look in real life?
So to some degree or another, I have blocked out specific hours during the day to go in and do those different things. But I have to tell you that this is where is Will strongest in terms of manager, entrepreneur, technician. I am totally the entrepreneur. I am the guy who creates the mess that the technician and the manager come and clean up. And then second, I'm definitely a technician in terms of some of the things that I can execute on. And my main technician skill is selling. And then lastly, I'm the manager, the guy who goes in and really organizes and cleans things up. And so one of the things that I had to understand and do was, how do I create an environment where my skill actually translates into real money so I could support other people to build a business? And so we started out, it was just me and the developer's side of things, because I knew I could be the project manager, I could be the sales guy, and they could be the developers. So you have to kind of see where in the eMyth, one of the things it says is, envision what this thing looks like when it's done. What does the business look like when it's done? And I remember the first time I heard that, I was like, when it's done? Well, it's a business. How could it ever be done? And starting with the end in mind is powerful, powerful, powerful stuff, because it helps you recognize where you're going. And so that's entrepreneur work, right? Is envisioning, what does this thing look like? What income streams do I want from it? Where does it go? And so if you're going to do the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday thing that I mentioned, you've got to make sure that you give, maybe it doesn't work to break it up like that for you for a week. Maybe you need to do a half day in the morning or whatever, but I would say give yourself time to do that. And so to bring it full circle for me, how I did it, I found someone who is so good at being a manager that she essentially runs my calendar and my schedule. So if you were to go look at my calendar today, I have every single minute of the day scheduled. And this executive virtual assistant that I have completely schedules the whole thing, because I'm not a manager, and I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a visionary guy. That's kind of my thing. And so for me, I didn't have the self-discipline to do some of that. And so I found someone who did, and have made an agreement with her, and she schedules me to get where it needs to go. And honestly, with our powers combined, we are a very dangerous machine. We can do some really cool stuff.
I bet. I love that. Just reflecting on what you're saying, I love that question. How do I create an environment where my skills translate into money? And I think that's one frustration that I've had. And I know a lot of my clients, a lot of them more successful than me, and I'm very happy about that. But they struggle with those questions as well. Because, I mean, some of them have just major skills in some areas that don't seem, they end up seeming like a distraction to their core business. But if they got themselves involved in the right way of doing it as a separate project where they could have a sandbox, which could then be turned into something sellable, then actually it would be in a major addition. I do see sometimes people manage to bolt an extra piece onto their business and make that happen. I often find that I sort of block myself with that. And I think the shiny object syndrome everyone talks about is a part of that, right? Because entrepreneurs love new stuff. They love creating new stuff. They get really bored with an existing business. They're like, oh, I could sell on Amazon. Oh, I could now sell on Facebook. I could have a Shopify store. I'm like, whoa, hang on. And the manager, if there's anyone in the business who's a manager, is going like, yeah, but the Shopify store isn't working yet. It looks ugly and we're losing traffic and we're not doing abandoned car sequences yet. And so there's always that tension, right? I love the fact that in the end, you have to just get a different person involved. I think whether it's a business partner or you hire somebody, I love the fact you've hired somebody to manage you. I mean, I don't think I've got the budget for that yet, but I that's definitely what I need.
You'll get there. And honestly, I was surprised at how quickly that it justified itself.
I can imagine.
It was very rapidly. I mean, it took 2 to 3 months before it was like, holy crap, we're seeing a productivity increase here.
I think that's pretty quick. I mean, 2 or 3 months for me. I mean, if you think back at the end of 1 year, how much difference that'll have made. I mean, that's pretty amazing.
Oh, it's unreal. And it's exciting because I can see progress being made on the business at a level that is incremental. It's growing. And over time, I can see that we're solving problems that we're never going to have to solve again. That's where it gets exciting. When you've looked at something, you're like, I am never going to have to onboard someone and have a really awful experience for them again, because we've written an employee handbook about how to onboard people. And so the next time we onboard someone, it's like, oh, we do a 1-hour meeting where we get them access to everything. And then they have a whole bunch of training material. Like, it was getting to the point where I was explaining the products that we offer over and over, and I was getting so tired, and I was just like, ugh. And they came in and said, well, let's just record everything. And I had done this before. I was like, okay, cool, I'll record it. And then it came time to hire the next person, which was like 6 months later. And it was like, does anybody know where that recording went?
That's classic. So classic. Yeah.
And so for me, it was having an individual who was detail-oriented enough to remember, and not only to remember, but to get done and have the energy to pick up that recording and put it into a Google Drive folder where everybody could find it. And so it's been mind-blowingly helpful to find people. So we use something called the Kolbe, K-O-L-B-E. And it's a personality test, essentially. That it's technically not a personality test because it's testing your work habits and how you interact with the world. And it has been mind-blowingly helpful. So if you're not using personality tests to hire and figure out, you know, who's the right person to hire and delegate to, could not recommend more that you implement personality tests. And you may think, oh, that's, you know, I don't know about that. Shockingly valuable in terms of how much it allows you to really get organized.
Amazing. Well, one last question on this, and then we better move to our next episode. But how did you hire your executive VA? Because they sound like they were a real sort of turning point for you and your business.
So I started, my first hire as far as an assistant was concerned was on Upwork. That didn't work very well. My first hire was a recent college graduate, and I trained her how to do a lot of what was there, and it ended up not working very well. My second one was on Upwork. My third one was on FreeUp. And last but not least, I found a company called Satiated Artists, which is a company that specializes in training and helping you find VAs. So if you're looking for someone, and they do project managers and executive virtual assistants and VAs. So one thing I discovered is I'm not real good at training those sorts of individuals either. And so I found a company that specializes in that. So highly recommended that you find a company that specializes in training executive virtual assistants or you know, whichever way you want to look at it.
Okay. And how much is all this sort of cost? Because I know that's how long is a piece of string, but in your case, how much did you find it ended up costing? Because it sounds quite pricey.
Well, and it can be pricey for sure. I found that it was well worth the cost. In this case, this company stays involved in your business. And so you end up paying anywhere from $25 to $35 an hour for someone like that. There are other businesses that do it differently, but it really boils down to how much of the manager, how much of the technician, and how much of the entrepreneur do you have in you? If you are a full-blown entrepreneur and you're having a tough time organizing yourself, you're probably going to need to pay a little bit more. But you probably have some skills that can offset that if they're channeled in the right way, it'll make sense.
I always find that there's that inner battle that how valuable is my time in, not in some way of I'm worth it in some kind of L'Oreal advert quoting way, but like in measurable, Mike has added X value to his business this month by his presence. And that's a hard one to work on. But I'm quite sure that even if you got a sort of second rate for executive assistant, as long as they're more organized than you are, then in theory it should improve things, right? And I've had that experience with people at $4 an hour from the Philippines.
Absolutely. My assistant from FreeUp carried me for an entire year until I got to the point where my schedule and my calendar and the scale of the business was so complex that she was no longer capable of handling the shifting priorities around what was there. And she was great, and she worked hard, and her attitude was fantastic. I was really sad to let her go, but she wasn't a good fit for the role anymore because I needed somebody who could handle the more sophisticated calendaring and scheduling that I had going on.
That does make sense as the business changes, but nevertheless, quite comforting. You can hire somebody from FreeUp who I've used in the past, and I've recommended to my clients who also use them. So they're pretty good at sort of coming out of the gate ready-made, aren't they? So, and pretty affordable. So between about $5 an hour was for Philippines and $10 an hour for the States, mm-hmm. I understand. So quite affordable. Well, look, really thought-provoking stuff. If people want to talk to you, obviously you think very deeply about this stuff. I can tell your passion for it. I know you've got a free consultation that you offer people, so tell people a little bit about how that works and how they can get out of you.
Absolutely. So this is me and any member of, if you're trying to get on my schedule specifically, it can take a little bit longer, but I have team members that are ready to jump on this immediately. We do a thing called systems design. And this is where we pick apart your processes and we ask three key questions. We ask, where's the data now? Where does the data need to go? And what needs to happen to it in between? And you can insert anything you want for that word data. And we pick apart, create a diagram, and look at where that goes. A lot of times we'll skip the diagram because we've automated it before, and we'll just dive right in and automate something for you. It just depends on where your processes are at. But this systems diagramming is a skill that we share with the world for free. So you get 30 minutes of that just by mentioning this podcast and jump on with us. And we're happy to jump in and see how we can help you.
Excellent. And where would people go for that? What's the link?
Dataautomation.com. Just head straight to our homepage. And you can hit us through the contact us form or the sticky footer. So,
excellent. Now that sounds really cool. I mean, definitely, I'm lucky in the podcast that I get to speak to somebody like you for free for an extended time and ask the questions that I want to ask. But if anyone's got the opportunity to speak to you, quite clearly from listening to this podcast, you know, it's obvious that you're going to have massive value to share. So brilliant. Take that up if you're listening. And Will, many, many thanks for coming on the show.
Yep, absolutely.
Thanks so much for listening to the 10K Collective podcast, part of the family of amazing FBA podcasts. Today's episode is sponsored by the new e-commerce podcast, The E-Commerce Leader. The podcast is hosted by yours truly and Jason Miles, multi-million dollar Shopify owner and Unami's highest rated e-commerce instructor. If you're the owner of a thriving online business and you want to become the best e-commerce leader you can be, it's got your name on it. For free guides and mini courses on many topics, go to www.theecommerceleader.com.